ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading this morning texts 14 and 15 from chapter 2, Daksha curses Lord Shiva.
Pretabasheshu Goreshu
Pretayar Bhuta Ganayar Vritaha
Atatyun Matavan Nagno
Yukta Kesho Hashan Rudan
Chita Bhasma Kritak Snana
Preta Sran Nrasti Bhushana
Shiva Padesho Yashivo
Mato Mata Janak Priyaha
Mati Pramatak Natanam
Tomo Tamo Matrat Makat Makmanam. Okay, take it from the top.
Pratavasheshu Goreshu
Pritayar Bhuta Ganayar Vita
Atatyun Matavan Nagno
Yukta Kesho Hasan Rudan
Chita Bhasma Kritak Snanaha
Preta Sran Nas Nrasti Bhushana
Shiva Padesho Yashivo
Mato Matak Janak Priyaha
Pati Pramatak Natanam
Tamo Matratma Katmanam
Preta Avasheshu
At the burning places of dead bodies. That's a crematorium.
Goreshu
Horrible.
Pretai
By the Pretas.
Bhuta Ganai
By the Bhutas.
Vritaha
Accompanied by
Atati,
he wanders.
Unmatavat,
like a madman.
Nagnaha,
naked.
Vyuptakeshaha,
having scattered hair.
Hasan,
laughing.
Rudan,
crying.
Chitta
of the funeral pyre.
Bhasma
with the ashes.
Krita
snanaha
taking bath.
Preta
of the skulls of dead bodies.
Srak
having a garland.
Nri asti bhushanaha
ornamented with dead men's bones.
Shiva apadeshaha.
Who is Shiva or auspicious only in name?
He
for
Ashiva
inauspicious.
Mataha
crazy.
Mata Janapriyaha,
very dear to the crazy beings.
Patihi,
the leader. Pramata Natanam of the Lord of the Pramatas. Tamak Matra Atmaka Atmanam of those grossly in the mode of ignorance. We've just chanted the very offensive verse. But here's the translation. He lives in filthy places like crematoriums, and his companions are the ghosts and demons, naked like a madman, sometimes laughing, sometimes crying. He smears crematorium ashes all over his body. He does not bathe regularly, and he ornaments his body with a garland of skulls and bones. Therefore, only in name is he Shiva or auspicious. Actually, he is the most mad and inauspicious creature. Thus, he is very dear to crazy beings in the mode of ignorance, and he is their leader. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This man really got a problem. Those who do not regularly bathe are supposed to be in association with ghosts and crazy creatures. Lord Shiva appeared to be like that. But his name, Shiva, is actually fitting, for he is very kind to persons who are in the darkness of the mode of ignorance, such as unclean drunkards who do not regularly bathe. Lord Shiva is so kind that he gives shelter to such creatures and gradually elevates them to spiritual consciousness. Although it is very difficult to raise such creatures to spiritual understanding, Lord Shiva takes charge of them, and therefore, as stated in the Vedas, Lord Shiva is all auspicious. Thus, by his association, even such fallen souls can be elevated. Sometimes it is seen that great personalities meet with fallen souls, not for any personal interest, but for the benefit of creatures. Some of them are in the mode of goodness, some of them in the mode of passion, and some of them in the mode of ignorance. Lord Vishnu takes charge of persons who are advanced in Krishna conscious, who are advanced Krishna conscious Vaishnavas. And Brahma takes charge of persons who are very much attached to material activities. But Lord Shiva is so kind that he takes charge of persons who are in gross ignorance and whose behavior is lower than that of the animals. Therefore, Lord Shiva is especially called auspicious. That's a nice way to turn an offensive utterance into something very nice. I remember some time, a number of years ago, Murari Chaitanya, many of you know Murari Chaitanya in Chicago, he was conducting, when we had home programs, there was a policy, it was hard to keep it up, that while the adults had their class, he would go into a separate room and give a class for the kids. Because kids are important, they're spirit souls, and their attraction to Krishna can also be nurtured rather than going up in the romper room and jumping on the bed and playing on video games on the computer and all the other
distracting things the kids do. So the kids loved Murari Chaitanya because he was so fun. And in fact, we finish our class and the kids' class would still be going on. They didn't want to stop. They, you know, we have to go take prasadam. Come on, we're having a nice time. So one time, he got the idea of showing Vaishnava perspective on Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. And he quoted this, he went down the path of some people say these things without understanding who is Lord Shiva. And but actually this is how one should see Lord Shiva, the transcendental side. And then when the kids came upstairs or from wherever they were, from their room where they were, to start telling their parents, what did you learn today? Oh, we learned that Lord Shiva does these things. And the parents went ballistic. Some of the parents. And they stopped coming to the programs because they thought, you know, this, what Murari Chaitanya is doing is saying bad things about Lord Shiva. He was shocked. He didn't know what to do. He went to the parents and explained, this is what I was doing. He said, get out of here. Because, they only got part of the picture. So, what to speak of, the question was asked yesterday, how did the sages and demigods and elevated personalities, how did they take what's being said? You can just do a quick math and come up with how they felt about it. It's grossly offensive. It's not that he's reporting external things inaccurately, but his sense of who the person is grossly inaccurate and offensive. Take, for example, Rishabhdev, discussed in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, is an incarnation. He's a plenary expansion of the personality of Godhead. And he appeared as a king, and of his sons, Bharat Maharaj was one. And his instructions are, obviously, from you hear his instructions to his sons, they're on the topmost platform of knowledge and realization. He's the personality of Godhead. And he speaks first person about, as does Kapila to Devahuti, about worshipping me and one can attain perfection and so on. So he had very clear understanding of his identity. He's the personality of Godhead. After installing Bharat Maharaj on the throne, for some time he remained in the royal palace. But in his existence in the royal palace, he had changed from his disposition of the ruler to a renunciate. And the two didn't go well together, because here he is in the royal palace in this completely detached, extremely detached from social nuance, anything to do with the body. It didn't go well in the royal palace. He was in Avaduta in the royal palace. So he left the royal palace. He wasn't attached to the royal palace. And he went traveling here and there. And as he went traveling here and there, people, ordinary people, they also didn't understand who he was. Although some knew that he formerly was the king, they thought, this person has gone mad. And the children, like what happened with Shukadeva Goswami, the children followed him and taunted him and teased him and called him names, and he didn't respond. They thought it was fun. Just, harassing this person walking through the marketplace and through the villages and through the forests. And it came to the point where just existing in the midst of people behaving like that, he chose to lie down in the road like a python
and not move. And if people brought him something to eat, he would then eat, and otherwise he wouldn't eat. That's like the example of the python. Prabhupada describes there are pythons that's what they do. They just lie in one place and they become big. And they can, it says something walks, it comes by them, they just open their mouth, something walks in their mouth, and they close their mouth, and that's it. Down the length of the python, and strong acidity, and the body gets digested, and then the python passes stool. So Rishabdev did like that, and specifically to keep people away, he rolled in his own stool. He even specifically describes he smeared his body with his stool so people just leave him alone. People left him alone. And we're not supposed to imitate that behavior. But extreme detachment. And so the behavior was to have people leave him alone. Gorkishordas Babaji, more contemporary, described in his biography that he just to have people leave him alone, he would sometimes hide under a boat along the bank of the Ganges. Sometimes he would go into the public latrine. I mean, not just a bathroom, but those public latrines are... Phew. And he would go there and chant. So people would just leave him alone. One time it's described, he, instead of wearing discarded cloth similarly that he got from a crematorium, and as a bowl, he had a human skull, that's what he would eat from. That was pretty radical. One time, just he went the opposite direction. He went to a shop and got the finest of cloth and sat in a chair in the front of a well-known prostitute's home, and as people would go by, he'd wave to them. See, I'm a pretender, I'm not a renunciate, I'm a fallen person, leave me alone. Or another time, because he had an ashram, and in his ashram there were others that were living an austere life like him, and one industrialist came to his home and he closed the door of his little cottage, and they, you know, knocked on his door and said, we've just come for some service. Is there any service that we can do? He said, yes, you can pass stool outside my door so the people like you won't come around here. It smells bad. You're just materialistic people. So why did Lord Shiva do those things that he did? I've never read any explanation of why he took ashes from the crematorium and smeared ashes. We find specifically described by Rishabdev why he did that, was just have people leave him alone. For garland. That's the verse that we chanted. Titta Bhasma Kritak Snana. He wore a garland of skulls and he never took a bath. Preta shram nristi bhushanam. Bhushanam means ornaments. And what did he have as ornaments? Bones, skulls, nice garland, ashes, no bath. And his friends were ghosts and crazy creatures. So, by external appearance, which is the basis upon which Daksha was evaluating what he saw, I don't want anything to do with this person. And the next verse is, but he became my son-in-law. Just quickly, we'll cover the following verse. So that he says, this is how it happened, Suja, this is how it happened that he became, his daughter was given in marriage to Lord Shiva. The next verse. On the request of Lord Brahma, I handed over my chaste daughter to him, although he is devoid of all cleanliness and his heart is filled with nasty things. Notice projection. My heart is filled with nasty things, and so I see that other people's hearts are filled with nasty things. It happens like that. Anyway. Prabhupada writes in the purport, it is the duty of parents to hand over their daughters to suitable persons just befitting their family tradition in cleanliness, gentle behavior, wealth, social position, etc. Daksha was repentant that on the request of Brahma, who was his father, he had handed over his daughter to a person who, according to his calculation, was nasty. He was so angry that he did not acknowledge that the request was from his father. Instead, he referred to Brahma as Parameshti, the supreme teacher of the universe. Because of his temperament of gross anger, he was not even prepared to accept Brahma as his father. Daksha's got a big problem. In other words, he accused even Brahma of being less intelligent because he had advised Daksha to hand over his beautiful daughter to such a nasty fellow. In anger, one forgets everything. And thus Daksha, in anger, not only accused the great Lord Shiva, but he criticized his own father, Brahma, for his not very astute advice that Daksha hand over his daughter to Lord Shiva. This man's got a big problem. So, anger. So this is now the third. Envy, pride, and anger. That's, you know, three out of six. He's well situated in the enemies of, influenced by, or controlled by the enemies of a living entity. When these qualities are present, they destroy all good qualities. Everything that's good becomes destroyed. On top of it, Daksha's conviction was material elevation through karmakanda rituals. That's what he was daksha or expert in. Karmakanda rituals, material elevation. And in a contrasting position, Jambavan. When Krishna entered Jambavan's cave to secure the Shyamantaka jewel, the nurse that saw Krishna enter the cave thought it was a thief. And she cried. And when hearing the nurse cry like that, Jambavan came in anger to protect his family. And a big fight ensued between Jambavan, who's a devotee of Krishna, and Krishna. He didn't even recognize Krishna because he was covered by anger. And what does anger arise from? Kamesha, Krodesha, Rajoguna Samudbhava, from contact with the mode of passion, attachment, and from attachment, anger. Boom, 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 domino. So, we're in this earthly realm, or Bhumandala, where passion rules. Intense fruitive activity rules. Prabhupada speaks about the nature's arrangement is there for all living entities to have their necessities of life. But the human being, in the mode of passion, looks right past it and creates an ugra karma civilization, a nasty civilization, where they have to work so hard to achieve what? Necessities of life, they're already there. Look around. They're there. Just use the resource that's provided. Necessities are there. But instead of necessities, now there's this artificial necessities. They're not necessities. They're the product of illusion. And, expert marketing, where people think, I have to have the latest. Otherwise, I'm not keeping up with the Joneses or the others. I have to prosper. I have to work hard to prosper. I have to get that degree so I can get a good job, so I can prosper. And that's advancement. There's the whole story. And the real purpose of life is lost. Nate vidu svartakatim vivishnu durasha ye bahir arta maninas. Arta maninas. Bahir arta maninas. Persons think that the happiness is there. The goal is outside. Get that thing and enjoy. It's called marketing. And then so many things are created to get people to enjoy. Prabhupada told, as far as I can recall, it was Prabhupada said, the British introduced so many things. One of them was tea. Before the British introduced, they didn't do. But they, went into the public places and said, here, take a cup of tea, it's free. So they get people, oh, this is very nice. And then now it's, people in India can't live without tea. You gotta have tea. So there's fields and fields and fields. Instead of food, it's tea. And then there's a shortage of food. Because they have fields and fields of tea and rubber trees. And, look here in the Midwest. So much cattle feed. Miles and miles, as far as you can see, is stuff for feeding the animals that they slaughter. Anyway, ugra karma, we don't have enough food. Prices are too high. It's awful. It's ugra karma. It's another one that Prabhupada described. When the meat industry took off when they figured out refrigeration, because it's nasty. The meat rots and ferments and smells awful. So you get refrigeration. Then all of a sudden there's the meat industry. Because you can do the thing, the nasty thing, and refrigerate it. And then color it, make it look nice, put it in a nice saran wrap, and there you go. So the industrialization, this ugra karma civilization, it starts with passion and it deteriorates into misery, into ignorance. It's how it works. It's how the modes of nature work. Here's a visual image that works very well for me. Supposing you have a big bucket of white paint. You take a little eyedropper and squirt a little red in and stir. What do you got? You got off-white. And how are you going to get it white again? You're not going to get it white. It gets a little less off-white, but it doesn't stop, but it's still off-white. But it doesn't stop there. When you add passion to life, it's, in moderation. A little passion to life, there's a reaction. It adds more. So the little eyedropper full of red becomes two eyedroppers full of red, and then from that it becomes some blue. It just continues, and after some time, it's no longer white paint. It's some other color. It's just white is in the background, and the other one has proliferated. It's another visual image is a whirlpool or vortex. You put something on the outside of this vortex that's going around and around. What happens? It's drawn towards the middle, and it starts going faster, and it goes down, and then... That's Kali Yuga. And it starts with Satya Yuga, with some mix of passion and ignorance. And so we're getting a classic portrayal of what happens when there's a pious person, because remember the question that started the chapter, Vidura wanted to know from Maitreya, how did this happen? Daksha is so elevated. He's so attached to his daughter, Sati, and Lord Shiva. And, you know, how did this conflagration happen? And the answer is a nice little amount of the mode of passion takes care of it. It destroys everything. Because all the things that we've been saying, that the passion connected to piety, I want to enjoy, connect that with religious activities that helps one in bring the piety so that you can enjoy, but the heart is not pure, then comes these other things, these unwanted things, pride, attachment to the position of being the enjoyer. And the gross enjoyment is objects, and the subtle enjoyment is honor and distinction and title. I'm the father-in-law, and he should respect me. You know, some of you may have been through it. I'm the father-in-law. You should respect me. Well, you know, don't look at what my qualities are. Just, I'm the father-in-law. I'm a Brahmin. You should respect me. Anyway, etc. I'm a panda. You should give me money. We've been through it in some places in the Holy Dham. They'll harass you to pieces. It's not just embarrassing, it's sometimes vicious. I've personally experienced it. Grab you by the shirt and say, give me money. You know, surround you with sticks in their hands saying, give me money. They're not pandas, they're gundas. It's awful. You know, I'm a Brahmin. Brijvasi Brahmin, give me money. Or you're in trouble. Anyway, sorry to go there, but put a little dose of passion, and then from that these other things follow. So one has to be very... We'll go back to Krishna consciousness besides, you know, daksha and the daksha yajna, the curse and the conflagration. We're practicing devotees, we have to be cautious, to say the least, about things with the senses, come in contact with sense objects, with the expectation that that's going to bring happiness, and I'll just do it in a religious way. I'll chant Hare Krishna, and then bring the senses in contact with sense objects. And I deserve it. I've worked hard. I've, you know, been a nice Prabhu. A nice devotee. I've been trying to, so I deserve a little enjoyment. In moderation. And then it leads to complications. And it can lead to, you know, in radical degrees to this kind of awful, offensive mentality. Where one's own contaminations or inauspiciousness becomes projected upon others, that others are not auspicious. Up to, in this case, Lord Shiva. So a couple of other thoughts on what Prabhupada has written. The way that he starts in the beginning is, those who do not regularly bathe are supposed to be in the association with ghosts and crazy creatures. So you read in Lilamrita, and that was the situation that Prabhupada encountered when he went to preach in the Lower East Side. He found that many people lived in places, they called them squats. It's a place where it was an empty place, a beat up empty place, no one cared for it, so they just lived there. And there was no bathing place. Prabhupada commented, I would see every third day they would ask a friend, oh, can I go and use your shower and take a shower or take a bath? Because for 3 days they didn't. Because they weren't, whatever, they were in such a condition. And they were poor. They were hippies that didn't have the means to maintain themselves, some of them. And that was the audience. So Prabhupada is stating here, those who do not regularly bathe, they're supposed to be in association with ghosts and crazy creatures. That was his audience. One time in Hawaii, Prabhupada was dealing with circumstances in ISKCON, in Hawaii, and they were very troubling. And he made a statement that said, my fault is that I'm a follower of Lord Nityananda, and as a result I've accepted so many persons as disciples that are not so qualified, and so I have so much trouble, but what can I do? And by his association he picked those persons up. But sometimes they slipped, and when they slipped it was a long fall and a crash at the bottom. And that became problematic. Or another statement that's in the purport is that sometimes it is seen that great personalities meet with fallen souls, not for any personal interest, but for the benefit of those souls. Lord Nityananda is one of those who gave his association, like Lord Shiva, to unfortunate persons. But he's very kind, very, very merciful. I recall Prabhupada stating, I didn't understand it at the time, but he said, if you see Lord Nityananda coming from a liquor shop, you should understand that he has gone there to give the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not that he has gone there to get liquor at the liquor shop. Similarly, a great personality may give their association to a fallen person. They may meet with fallen souls, not for any personal interest, but for the benefit of those creatures. So, Christ similarly, ordinary people, fishermen, people not well-educated, elevated, highly qualified persons, but very kindly extended compassion, compassionately extended his association to those persons, and by association elevated. So this is the position of Lord Shiva, that it's not something that comes toward the end of this fourth canto. Helps us understand it's not that that's the only type of person that Lord Shiva ever extends his mercy to. For example, Lord Shiva at the end of this canto extended his mercy to the Prachetas, and because they were very, very elevated, most elevated. And through Lord Shiva's association, they became perfected beings. Lord Shiva has his own sampradaya, and the persons that make up the sampradaya are not ghosts and spirits. They're wonderful Vaishnavas, Rudra Sampradaya. In Vrindavan during Kartik, near Varsana, there's a, commonly and annually, a camp where Rudra Sampradaya followers, Vaishnavas, have a month-long parikrama of Vrindavan, and you know, they're chanting the holy names the whole time and glorifying the personality of Godhead, Krishna, in Vrindavan. So it's not that the only associates that you find Lord Shiva with is these fellows. But regardless of one's position, Lord Shiva extends his kindness. Now, unfortunately, some persons think kindness means something material. And because Lord Shiva is very compassionate, he extends. So people like worshipping Lord Shiva because they can get something material very easily. But his interest is not giving them something material. His interest is giving them, elevating them gradually. And it's very difficult to elevate very fallen, very covered persons. But Lord Shiva is very compassionate, and therefore Lord Shiva, he's most auspicious. In that way, he's most auspicious. But this, because Daksha is completely covered by envy, he can't see that. And because he can't see that, and because he's very proud and angry and envious, and his own heart is filled with many nasty things, he sees that Lord Shiva's heart is filled with many nasty things. So we should beware of persons with that kind of spirit or mentality, being filled with their own stuff, pride, anger, lust, greed, madness, illusion, bewilderment, the faults or the enemies of the conditioned soul. If there is some attraction for the personality of Godhead, that's something that's, there's some hope. And that's the thing that should be encouraged and fan the spark. And the other things, depends on one's digestive capacity, when you can be around somebody that has a toxic mentality because of their own impurities. Okay, we'll end there. See if there's any discussion. Bill, you have something?
Yes, I read in Ramnath Swami's book, The Journey Home. I remember reading that like the first group it came with was a group of Shivites, and they would hoop and holler and yell all kinds of crazy stuff and do all kinds of wild dancing. So were they trying to imitate Shiva in that particular way?
I don't know. I've never had such association. Sounds like, but I don't know. Anything else? Yes.
You mentioned a couple of times that there's something nasty inside, left it.
Yeah.
Sometimes we also have this, where we discriminate, or we be able to identify that a certain person has a certain quality that they're struggling with, or something like that. So it seems like the mood in which we do that is pivotal. We have to be careful there. So how do we know about the distinction between the two? Am I projecting, or am I doing this in my own service?
I'm surprised you're asking the question. It's easy to tell the difference between of the mood. Is the mood a mood? The platform is service. So the advice to a Vaishnava is not to turn your intelligence to the off position. We discriminate. We're enjoined to discriminate. Madhyama Adhikaris must. And we must, so we must understand what's what. Projecting happens when we're not in the mood of service. But, you know, you just, before you begin, before you launch into the wonderful task of analyzing things with your wonderful intelligence, before you begin that exercise, go to the reset spot that says, what impurities inside me are things that need to be improved? And that's my baseline. That's the place that I operate from. My business is to make my heart pure. And then one can be in a humble mood of being the servant of all the living entities. Then from that position, you can look at other living entities and engage your intelligence and understanding according to the instructions from Scripture and so forth, the lessons that have come from Prabhupada's teachings and so on. What is this? What is that? What is the other thing? First it says what, and then what to do. By practice, it can happen very quickly, but we're not so practiced of being in the humble mood, so we have to emphasize being in the humble mood, looking for our own imperfections. Where can this place be made clean? Squeaky clean, very, very pure. If that's predominating, then it's very clear when projecting starts or when it's the mood of service continues. And let's say commonly things are somewhere in between. But then acknowledge that and make your main business make the heart pure. Because how can you be of assistance to someone else unless the heart is pure? Or to the degree that the heart is pure, you can be a better assistant to someone else. Purity is the force. Even if there is the capacity to discriminate between this and that, so what? What are you going to do with that if the heart's not pure? You become part of the problem rather than part of the solution because your heart's not pure. So make the first business is making the heart pure, not them, oneself. That's the first business. And when that's the operative platform, the baseline from which you're working, you feel it, you know it, it's clear. Work towards that. When in doubt, work towards that.
It seems like sometimes you start off in that form and then you figure it out in left field.
Okay, so don't go too far afield. Yes?
So the understanding is like Daksha is even though elevated.
So Daksha even though is...
He's so elevated.
Elevated.
Uh-huh.
Yes. He also has some dirty things.
He must be knowing that Shati is eternally a wife of Shiva, but still he's been covered with that.
And that's why Brahma made the recommendation. She's the eternal consort, and this is her eternal husband. So, do the needful. That's why he said. He's Brahma. And he's got a son that's not as qualified as him.
So, one more question on that. So, if Supreme Personality of Godhead comes face to face, so does the all in front of anybody, does all the anathas will go away?
Not immediately. Look at Jambavan. 1 month. Day and night, non-stop. Jambavan. So that comes one of these questions. Well, what about us? You know, if Jambavan can... Jambavan. So, not necessarily immediately. Muchukunda. He didn't recognize Krishna, although he's Krishna's devotee. Muchukunda, not me, not one of us, but he's a very qualified person. So, why are you asking the question? You want to see Krishna and then you can become free from your impurities, or become free from your impurities so you're qualified to see Krishna? So I should just stay here, right?
Other things. I can feel that difference. But after that, I mean, I'm trying to do that, but it's like, you know, that potency, the spiritual thing is like something I always find the difference, Maharaj. So that's why I was asking.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.